Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast, where we might be talking some Chargers, but not as much as you would think. Joined by Brandon Furtado once again this season. Hi, Brandon.
What's going on, Rob?
And our newcomer for the season, William Jones. Will, welcome to the pod, officially your first official show of the season. And as part of our crew, welcome in, bud.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Brandon, I'm going to start with you because this offensive game plan for Baltimore was the biggest reason they lost. I mean, yes, they lost by a toe and all that stuff as well, but ultimately, at the end of the day, this was poor play calling that gave you flashbacks to last year with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, it's, you know, for three and a half quarters, You can't run wide receiver and running back and tight end screens and then just mix in a lot of design QB draws. That doesn't win you a football game. It's too sloppy, and a lot of times it's how your players get injured when you're constantly beat, especially when you're beating your quarterback into the ground with QB draws. You know, Lamar Jackson took some shots tonight. He had to do a lot of work just to score 20 points. So, you know, what did he rush for? Almost 150 yards. So, I mean, you don't want him doing that. I mean, he can do it, but you don't want him doing that every week. I mean, you know, it's only week one, but the Ravens should have came out more prepared. It feels like they just slept walk for three quarters. And it feels like they just didn't wake up until pretty much the last, what, two or three drives of the fourth. I mean, that's not enough. And then we're scratching our head here because, you know, you're not utilizing Derrick Henry correctly. You're not utilizing Mark Andrews, even though he first came back from injury, but you still got to use him more than what you used him tonight. You're not using Zay Flowers correctly. And when you do, I mean, Lamar Jackson just missing him. That's just a communication and timing issue. But so many things were off here. But it reminded me a lot of Philly's playbook last year because it was the same things I saw. Design QB runs that didn't work in bad situations, and too many just screen passes that didn't make sense. Too many short, you know, 2 yard swing passes. You can't win a football game when your passes are going sideline to sideline and not, you know, north and south. You've got to be able to throw a ball for more than 10 yards. And when you don't do that on, you know, what seems like 95% of your plays, you're not going to win many football games, if any. And that's what happened here tonight.
And Will, when we think about those things, I know it's super early, but the Ravens can't win a playoff game playing like this in January. I mean, we have to go that far because that's their goal. Their goal is Super Bowl or bust this year.
Yeah, and build that with the Ravens with this offense. I don't know, because this season they could catch some teams off guard, but playing conservative and playing, you know, with screens and QB draws and all these, like, short yard percentage passes, it could be good for, like, a game or two. But I think if you're trying to get deep into his playoffs, like you said, and basically Super Bowl or bust, I feel like this type of offensive philosophy is not going to cut it when you're going down the season, especially trying to get deep into a tough seed AFC division and also conference.
Yeah, we talked about the division a few weeks back. The AFC North is as tough as can get. And then, of course, kind of the overall pieces of the conference, including the Chiefs. Speaking of the Chiefs, Will, I want your opinion as a whole about the Patrick Mahomes era Chiefs defense. There's been some good moments, some good defense as a whole, but it still looks as shaky as ever.
Yeah, it does. I know Chris Jones is doing what he has to do. I know Carl Office has done pretty well. I think the secondary has some good and some bad moments. Like, there is some good and bad. Usually, there has been in the history of Chiefs defense that the defense usually been pretty good, but usually been pretty suspect. But I always believe it's Steve Spagnuolo because I think Spagnuolo is arguably the best DC in football right now. And I believe in him and putting the right pieces in place to have the defense succeed despite not much talent. Because I remember the early stages, they had like a they had Dee Ford, Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, you know, last year Sneed. Like they had guys. It was just that at times they don't really live up, or they do live up mostly during the playoffs. So usually the philosophy is always the Bimbo don't break defense, and I think that's what happened tonight.
Yeah, and Brandon, do you see this defense growing as we get into January, or is it something that's going to continue to be a concern for us as we move even towards Thanksgiving?
I mean, you know, I look at it as, you know, and I was telling you guys before we hopped on that, you know, yeah, you know, every game matters in this league, right? So every game you want to get better, you know. So, I mean, this wasn't an awful showing for this defense tonight. But I feel like if you're going to play this way, especially with losing Legarius Sneed, if you're going to play this way the rest of the season, you're in trouble. Like, we thought they were in trouble last year because the offense didn't have any good receivers. And, you know, we didn't know what Rice was going to bring to the table. But I feel like defensively they were fine last year. It was just the offense was bad. Now it feels like this year it feels kind of flipped. This game, at least so far, you know, after just one game of week one, it feels like the offense just feels like it flows a little bit better, even though it wasn't great tonight. But it feels like we started off this year the reverse of last year. Whereas last year was great defense, not a great offense. This year it feels like good offense, not a great defense, even though they only gave up 20 points. But they gave up 20 points to pretty much a team just running screens and draws the whole night. So that's not really that good. A team running screens, you know, or really 26, or even they might have even lost had Isaiah Likely's foot been in. So you would have given up. You would have given up 26. We don't know about the 2-point conversion, but you gave up basically 26 if you count the toe out of bounds. By like a hair, you get up 26 to a team running draws and screens. That's not good football. That's not good defensive football. I mean, and really the only one that showed up tonight 100% was Chris Jones. So if they play like this come January, and I think they will get better, because week one, you know, you kind of, we always talk about week one, you know, nowadays, since the preseason's only 3 weeks long, we talk about, you know, week one is always an extension of the preseason. And that kind of felt this way tonight for both teams. But it just feels like, I mean, both defenses, but for the Chiefs to repeat as champions and go for that three-peat, you've got to be a little bit better going forward. And I think they will be, but you need better than what you got tonight.
And let's talk about the Chiefs as well on offense. Speed kills the name of the game, and Brandon, that continued today.
Oh, goodness. I mean, you know, you got Rice, Pacheco, Worthy. You know, those three guys are absolute speed demons. I mean, Xavier Worthy, we were concerned about what he would look like coming in. I mean, he had a fantastic night tonight. So, I mean, we knew how fast he was, but man, I didn't think it was, I like with the pads on, because, you know, obviously game speed and just doing, you know, regular, you know, offseason workouts and stuff is different. But my God, game speed, I don't want to say it, but he almost he looks just as fast, if not faster than Tyreek Hill. And that's insane. You know, we know Rice is fast. We saw that last year. He had a good game himself tonight. He put up some pretty decent numbers. And then Pacheco, you know, just that dual threat kind of back. I don't know, you can use him in a screen game and in a short pass game, and you can use him as a regular running back. And he runs like he's angry. We know that. So I look at it and I'm like, it's amazing. I was blown away by how fast they look tonight. And of course, you know, it almost seems like they had, you know, I hate to compare this to one of my own teams, but I did a lot of it last year, but with how fast they are, like, it looked like the Oregon Ducks offense out there. Like,
oh,
you know,
I think that's incredibly apt. I think that's a perfect comparison.
Because, you know, we always talk about how Oregon, you know, with them too, speed kills. They love having track stars on their team. Well, that's what you pretty much have in Pacheco, Rice, and Worthy. So when you put that together on a Chiefs team looking for a three-peat with a great head coach and a great quarterback, that's scary. And it's like that a lot of teams are not gonna be able to defend that. That's too much speed to wrap your head around. Like, if you let them get around the corner, it's over. It's going to be at least a 20, 25-yard gain every time. So, man, if they can keep that up, they've got a pretty historic – and I don't want to say they're going to, you know, it's going to be like a track meet out there, but that's what it feels like when they get out there. At least tonight it did. So, that's a great start for those three guys right there.
You know, this has been the motto for the Chiefs. They build through it through the draft, but – Will, this does feel like a receiving core that feels new and rejuvenated compared to last year.
Yeah, it feels a little bit better. I agree. I feel like mostly this doesn't feel mostly a Travis Kelce show. I know Rice, though he had to do last year, and he did pretty well in this game as well. I think Xavier Worthy, he's going to add pretty much, he's going to be pretty good. We don't know how or the future of Rice, because I know Rice is going through that legal issue of what he did during the offseason. And there's going to be likelihood that Worthy's probably going to take most of the load as the wide receiver one. And I think likelihood, probably Juju is either going to be two or Hartman is going to be the second one while Rice is out.
Rice is going to be an off-season thing, so he's going to be with the team the whole year. They announced that on the broadcast today, so it's actually really interesting that it's actually going to be a whole year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So with that, that's going to be so with Rice and Worthy, that's going to be a pretty good combo. Rice and Worthy's going to be a pretty good combo, and I feel like with that duo. And with this team, I feel like it's going to be a better one. This might be a little bit like a Tyreek Hill, though Tyreek Hill is kind of a different type of beast as my receiver. But I feel like this receiving core has flashes of being way better productively. Instead of being in the top 20, probably going to be in the top 10 this year.
Yeah, and Travis Kelce was pretty open about his role coming into the year. Brandon, do you feel like his role is actually going to change in this offense at all, as Will mentioned?
It feels like it kind of did a little bit tonight. I mean, we saw Noah Gray get more run. You know, we saw Justin Watson out there. You know, it feels like we're slowly transitioning away from having Travis Kelce be the – I mean, he's still the star there, but tonight, you know – They kind of mixed in their tight ends kind of well. I mean, you look at it, I think, you know, I mean, Kelce had a modest night tonight. You know, three catches, 34 yards, that was it. You know, that's not what we're used to seeing from him. We're used to seeing, you know, eight or nine catches for 90 yards and a TD or two. So, you know, part of that is the Ravens just kind of game planning for him, because I mean the Ravens and Chiefs, these are two high powered teams that they have been for really the past 5 years. But I think the role changes. I think it might be even just a week to week thing, just based on the matchup, because Noah Gray is a faster — I mean, he's not a better tight end, but he's a faster tight end than Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is one of the kind of those old – so he's one of the last of, like, the old-school tight ends that's physical, can box you out, and can catch pretty much, you know, everything thrown his way. So, you know, I mean, but even he had a drop tonight, or a drop or two. So, you know, I think the role changes as we go further in the season. I think depending on just kind of the – it's going to be kind of – it's not a tight end by committee thing, but I feel like – just depending on who they face, I think Travis Kelce will still get the majority of the snaps. But I feel like as the season goes on, if he kind of, you know, stays just, you know, last year we talked about him kind of declining a little bit. If it stays that way this year, then I think by the end of the year, you could see his role diminish a lot more. And eventually it'll just be one of those things where he's like, he ends up being like a Brent Celek role, where he's still on the team and is still a respected leader. But like when Brent Celek got to the end of his career, Zach Ertz took over more and more and more as the games went on and seasons went on. I feel like that's what's going to happen with Travis, where you're just going to have pretty much, they're going to set up, I would think, Noah Gray to be that guy as the season progresses.
Yeah, and then finally, to kind of finish this off, this was something more in the first quarter that, Will, I know you were really upset about. And a lot of people on Twitter were upset about it, I think, for the wrong reasons. The new rules, the new emphasis on keeping the offensive line, you know, together, you know, and kind of symmetrical. Ronnie Stanley didn't do that, and it cost them big time. They had like 8 to 10 penalties of that. It is a rule. It is something that has to be emphasized, and it was the correct call. But other teams and Stanley has got to learn from this, Will.
Yeah, it's got to be a point of emphasis. I feel like these penalties are some of the things that have been a noticeable issue. Sometimes the referees miss it. Sometimes they do it. Or they possibly don't really see the foot or don't pay attention to the foot that much. But I think that's going to be the point of emphasis. And I think Staley probably had some, you know, didn't have that much of knowledge of doing that, despite him being arguably more like noticeably experienced offensive lineman or tackle for the team. So it's kind of a little bit of surprising with that part. And I think that making sure that everyone lined up and don't have the advantage of either like a block for the edge rushers or the inside nose tackles. And I like how it's a point of emphasis. And at least with the season progressing, we might see it decrease or we might see more of it depending on how it goes. But I'm glad they're doing it. If they do it with the other penalties or at least anomalies in for this season, if they could do that like they did with the all linemen, then I think we probably might have a good referee type calling, at least for now. But I think might be a long shot, but who knows.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting. No hip drop tackle calls today. A couple missed calls on Mahomes there running out of bounds. But yeah, the offensive line thing, again, it is the correct call. Brandon, do you kind of feel the same way Will does, that this point of emphasis could end up kind of being a good thing, maybe to balance the officials out as well?
I feel like it can be. I just think, I mean, we see it time and time again, and it feels like a lot of those calls get, you know, we always talk about like offensive line calls being one of the things that is so hard to see. But officials are trained. That's why they're here, and they're trained to see little things that happen. So when they miss things that even we could probably see on even on a replay, like happen even live, or we can see things that just look unusual. It's good that they caught some things tonight, especially with the illegal formations. It's like, I mean, it drives us crazy because so many penalties, but it's the right call. When it's the right call and you know what you're looking for, I'm fine with it. It's just, you know, but the thing is that was a point of emphasis that they had pretty much coming into the season was, you know, the offensive line is going to be a lot more heavily scrutinized, especially ever since we've had, like last year, especially late in the season, we had a lot of controversy with like the way that Philly was lining up for the tush push and what was legal and what wasn't. And I think it's a great point of emphasis just to make sure teams are just doing what they're supposed to be doing, plain and simple. You know, and I think it'll balance things out. I think, you know, we'll start to see kind of more of those calls, you know, probably more than others, instead of just seeing just a lot of like, you know, like the standard stuff that you'll always see, like holding and offensive PI, whatever it is. I like the fact that they're keeping an eye just on the offensive line, because a lot of times too, that there's a lot of false starts that don't get called and haven't been called over the years. And I think that now they're kind of looking out for that. There's probably a couple ones they could have called tonight that looked a little close, but yeah, I think ultimately it's just going to be, that's just a better, it's a better focal point to kind of focus on something like that. I mean, even though, you know, people might say, oh, well, it's a little too much of a fine detail, but you know, not if a guy's lining up, you know, literally that far back behind the ball in the center. It's like that's not fair play, and B, that's just not legal. So it's good that they were catching stuff like that. I mean, the good thing is that I'm more focused on the hip drop stuff, because I don't think there was any instance tonight where we saw a hip drop tackle.
No, we didn't see anything of that sort tonight.
So, but I wonder if they would have called it, because that's such a weird call to make in real time. Because even though we still, like we're talking about in the offseason, even though there's rules about what constitutes a hip drop tackle, it's a lot harder to call it in the game. So, you know, I don't think we heard any of those calls in the preseason. And I don't think we heard it, and there wasn't any tonight. So I'm interested to see how that gets officiated going forward.
Yeah, I think it's something we'll see maybe some of that on Friday, but definitely some on Saturday. Any final thoughts from you both before we talk some Packers-Eagles?
Probably that ending. Like, what an ending to that game, to be honest. Honestly, if that... Huh?
A toe, man. Just a toe.
I mean, and it could have been avoided if the Ravens just clocked the ball better. Better clock management.
This is a huge problem across the league. Why are we better at this in Madden than actual NFL coaches? I don't understand that.
I don't understand how. I believe that was what, Rashad Bateman that made that catch?
Yeah, it was Bateman. Yeah.
So, he makes that catch. There's literally about 36 seconds left as like from the second he hits the ground, there's 36 seconds. That ball, you should be running up there. That ball should be spiked by around 30. You should not get up there and run another play. And they took another 20 seconds from that 30. They didn't snap the ball. Not that they didn't snap the ball, 10. But they, by the time that ball went back out of the back of the end zone, you had wasted basically 25 seconds between getting up off the catch, and running another play when you could have just spiked it. You were already pretty close to the end zone. You were what, like, you know, 10, 15 yards away. You were already right there. So that's the difference. You had to really rush your play calling, and then you only took two shots into the end zone afterwards when you could have taken double that, probably four. So it does not make sense to try to get up and run another play there rather than just spiking it, thinking it over for a second because the clock stops. You can think it over a little bit and then run a better play than what they ran, or better plays. So, and I mean, they also had a shot before that. You missed Zay Flowers in the end zone by a lot. Lamar Jackson didn't just miss him. Missed him by like 5 yards. That was a bad, like, bad throw.
Yeah.
But then, you know, likely comes down with that ball, and you're thinking, oh, here we go, you know, overtime. And then they don't know, Harbaugh's saying, oh, no, let's go for two. And we're like, oh, wait, they're going for two. And then, like, wait a minute, they have to look at this to make sure he scored. And it's, like, literally by a nose hair, like Kevin Durant's foot in the Nets playoff game. That's literally.
And that's what
it's about. It's a basketball play right there. Keep it in your footing, 100%.
Yeah,
it's once again black clock management and black bad play calling is what can hurt you at any point in the year, but especially as we get to January there. Packers Eagles. Let's do keys to the game for both teams. Brandon, I'll start with your team, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, if I have three keys, I mean, I feel like it's more or less straightforward. I think my three keys would be to just utilize Saquon Barkley. You have to. Last year you had DeAndre Swift, and you didn't use him correctly because you were afraid he was going to get hurt. But you have a much better running back, a top five running back on your team now, running behind what you know is a top five offensive line in this game, and you just got to utilize him. But not utilize him, not bell cow him, but just be smart when utilizing him. So be smart when utilizing him is the first key. Second key. Just, you know, Kellen Moore has to call a clean game. Yeah, I don't want to see, you know, overthinking. I don't want to see, because a lot of last year when Brian Johnson was here, it was a lot of, pretty much just overthinking too many plays. You had to take timeouts when you didn't need to or when you shouldn't have because you just could not get the play call correct. I need to see a clean game from Kellen Moore. And then my last key to the game is just, I think it goes to the defense. Vic Fangio needs to just not have, just, I don't want to rely on the bend but don't break Eagles defense that I've seen for so many years. Even the Super Bowl year, that defense was great, but it was still a little bit of a bend but don't break defense. And I feel like if you're going to get somebody who runs the, you know, the Eagles are kind of used to that scheme where, you know, you kind of need like those ball hawking DBs on top of a front seven that is mostly used for coverage and not rushing the passer. And you're going to need, the thing is, you had the copycats before Fangio came here, but everywhere Fangio's gone with that defense, he's had success. So, I mean, we can say last year, but Miami was hurt early in the season, they were hurt. When all their guys came back, that defense that was ranked somewhere in like the upper 20s became on the fringes of a top 10 defense. And I think by the end of the season, they eventually slightly cracked the top 10. So they were just fine once they got healthy. So I feel like that's the biggest key. It's not really much the health of Philly because we know that they're ready for the challenges that come and their depth is really good. So for me, it's the three keys are just utilize Saquon Barkley properly, have Kellen Moore just call a clean game, and just Vic Fangio, just don't get too cute trying to over game plan. Just, you know everybody just know their assignments, know who you got to pick up, know that you got to, know who you got to cover because the Packers have a lot of guys, that they might not be great, but they know their role on that team. So, Christian Watson's one of them. Of course, Josh Jacobs out of the backfield. And the thing is, his defense Fangio's defense relies on having coverage linebackers for those specific moments. So you're going to have to really pay attention to Luke Musgrave and Josh Jacobs. So, for me, those are the three keys. Just utilize Saquon correctly, have Kellen Moore call a clean game offensively, and then just make sure on defense that you're communicating and everybody knows their holes, and that starts with Fangio.
Let's do three keys for the Green Bay Packers. We'll go ahead.
For the Packers, I think mostly is Jordan Love at least play as well as you did in the second half of the season, like you did with the second half of the season for this upcoming game. I would say that would be the biggest thing because I feel like how he's have the receivers that they have some, like, not great, but some solid receivers like Christian Watson and others. And, they have also Josh Jacobs in the backfield, and their own line is one of the top O lines or a solid O line in the NFL. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing is for Love to play at least as much as he was able to do the second half of the season for this game. And I think that's the most important thing with the passing game. At least throw it out, give some of the receivers and tight ends some reception, get some good yardage, good pickup. Like, play at least outdo the Eagles secondary and try to at least get some good yards against secondary, run the ball a bit more because you got Josh Jacobs. To me, it's an upgrade over Aaron Jones. And I think that's the other thing is the running game. I think that's my second one. I think the running game, that one is the most important thing because, honestly, Josh Jacobs is able to be your bell cow type running back and will take the pressure off of Jordan Love. And I feel like with the Eagles, they usually struggle with the running game most of the time, especially their linebacking core not being solid. But the D-line is pretty good, but it's depending on who shows up because the only veteran they got right now is Brandon Graham. And also Bryce Huff is sort of a veteran, so they have him. But Fletcher Cox is a big loss because of how great he was as a defensive tackle and as a leader for that team. So that's going to be interesting. But I think running the ball is going to be a big thing for my second one. So passing for the first one with Jordan Love game, running back, running game, that's my second one. Then my third one is going to be about Matt LaFleur. I think Matt LaFleur, there has been times that I feel like with Matt LaFleur that some of his play calling has been pretty good, but has been pretty bad. It showed in the playoffs as well. I remember they did pretty good versus the Niners, and then the second half of that game, they fall apart in the playoffs. And I feel like Matt LaFleur in this game, there's going to be a different Eagles team, and I feel like it might come down to at least the coaching ability between both guys, between Nick Sirianni and Matt LaFleur. So I think Matt LaFleur just have to try to outcoach Nick Sirianni. And I don't have much against the defense because I feel like the defense is going to at least do what they got to do because they picked up some good guys. Like, they still got Alexander. They still got their D tackle. I forgot his name. Clark. And then also they acquired Xavier McKinney. So I don't have much of the defense. So I feel like Matt LaFleur is sort of my other third key to watch for the game.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be fun one on the Peacock. Enjoy watching it on that, and then obviously we'll be back here for the pod on Friday night, where Brandon is probably gonna go berserk. I can almost assure you. So look forward to that. For post-credit scenes during the week, obviously doing Sicario on Sunday. So doing the movies either Sunday or Monday, we are doing it on Sunday this week. For the post-credit scenes during the week shows, Thursdays and Mondays, obviously the special on Friday, but mostly Thursday and Monday. And we're just going to talk about something else, something that has happened during the week that has interested us, kind of overarching. A couple things I have is the one we're doing today. The Minecraft trailer, we might get to that throughout the week. Different things of that nature. Today we are going to talk about Concord. And I have a passion about this because we're all gamers here, right? We all love gaming. Mm-hmm. And Concord, to me, is a staple of what's wrong with gaming. Now, if you don't know about Concord, Concord is basically a Overwatch clone, pretty much. A live service game. And Sony has been pushing the live service model for this PS5 generation, and it's been a big problem. We'll get to those pieces. But Concord is an interesting story because, as it is pretty much an Overwatch clone, it also looks a lot worse. If you want to look at pictures or gameplay, take a look at that. But they greenlit this right as Overwatch came out 8 years ago. And it took them 8 years to build a game that, I'll be honest, no one was interested in. The market of live service games is pretty much dead. Like, we have, like, you see Suicide Squad doesn't have a lot of players. Concord, over the course of this week, had an average of, what, 300 players maybe? Which is not enough for a live service game. A Suicide Squad killed the Justice League. I think their peak was like 13K, still not enough. But the dominant ones, you know, Fortnite, Apex, still dominating. But most of the execs like Jim Ryan look at the peak and go, look at all this access money we can make from microtransactions, but you got to make a successful game first. You got to make something unique, like Helldivers 2, for example, look spectacular, much different kind of game. People got into it pretty immediately. At the same price point, $40. And here's another thing. This is basically an Overwatch clone. Less interesting. They wanted $40 for this. And they wanted $60 if you wanted to play it early. And most of these games, unless you can be like really special like Helldivers 2, these games are free-to-play games mostly. And that in most of these cases now, they're trying to charge for them as well. I mean, look at Suicide Squad with WB as well. But the game wasn't interesting. They wanted $40. And now, unprecedentedly, 2 weeks later from launch, the game is done. They're done with it. They're saying, we're going to give back refunds. We're going to replan. at Concord as it stands now in the next few days is done. And I also want to mention this because this is the key point. This is the biggest loss for a AAA game in the history of AAA games. Because 8 years ago when Sony saw this game, they bought Firewalk Studios, which is the developer of this game, 8 years ago for access of $200 million. This is a $200 million loss on Sony's books this year. And they have more games of this type coming out later this year. One about billionaires, which I think is called Fair Games. I think it's mostly a referendum on these type of games. But again, this is pretty unprecedented stuff for a AAA game to shut down this quickly. Brandon, what are your overall thoughts on the rise and fall of Concord?
You know, it feels like as we just get into such a, you know, obviously we are our generation, you know, early Gen Zers, you know, we are considered the first of the tech generation, right? And, yes. You know, we were the first ones to really grow up with technology. We were the first ones to see it really develop in front of our eyes. And it when I look at how video games are made today, so many of them, it's almost just like the movie industry. There are so many times where the budget just far exceeds what it should be and what the aspirations they have for it should be. And it just bombs miserably because it's almost like they don't have a grasp of what they're doing. And it feels like not just Concord, but just so many games, it feels like get either, you know, rumor, like any game or movie usually that gets stuck in development hell for years, much like this one did, it doesn't make any sense to release it. And because you know people aren't going to play it. It's just a failure all the way around. When you have like AAA title, that game, you got to know the correct timeline for when to put the games out. And you just got to know that what you're going to put out should work. You have to know what the feel of the gaming community is when you do stuff like this. And when you don't, these are usually the results. It bombs horribly. So I and it's crazy because a lot of these games keep costing more and more money. So you're taking bigger and bigger swings and misses if you are a big company that's trying to put out titles like this. So it worries me for the state of video games because, I mean, we complain about sports video games a lot, obviously, because we know about sports, but it's a lot of games we like to play, Madden. Yeah.
And I want to pause here because a lot of the things that we're seeing with Concord, Madden is doing similar things. EA Sports FC / FIFA is doing similar things. Like, this is not just a one-catch-fits-all thing with live service games. Madden, at its core with Ultimate Team and all these other modes, it's a live service game. Just got to point that out.
Yeah, it's, you know, like when games back in the day had, you know, when they were first introducing online features, you can play with people online. It was only, that's all it was. And now these games have basically transitioned to where the only thing people do now is play against people online. And that's never what original video games were intended for. They were meant so you could play it with people, you know, locally, like someone that's sitting next to you on your couch or whatever, not somebody, you know. I feel like the more we've pandered to, I mean, the thing is, it does make money because when you open it up to more audiences, it will make more money. Obviously, that's how things work. But it's becoming a thing now where it's becoming oversaturated. And we talk about this like every year, it feels like, with, you know, a lot of different types of media, but especially in video games, when you oversaturate the market with just nothing but the virtually these same kinds of video games, people get fed up and bored and tired of it. And that's why a lot of games are starting to bomb now. So, you know, Madden, I mean, Madden is still Madden, but I guarantee, probably if you look at the numbers this year, Madden had to have bombed. coming out of the gate.
It did last year. It did last year. I'll say that.
That bombed. I mean, look at NBA 2K23 and 24. Bombed.
25 doesn't look that good either.
Yeah, like those, that's just sports games. Now you have Concord. Bombed. Like, a lot of these, just, you know, it worries me for the future, because you know, even 10 years ago, which it's not a long time ago, but it's long enough in the shelf life of video games and things like that. 10 years ago, you did not see this many games just bombing out of the gate and getting delayed and getting pushed back and getting reworked. And we're going to add this, and this to the game. And then the problem is, to a lot of these AAA titles and why they bomb and why they take so long to come out, a lot of these companies, it's the same thing with the sports games that we talk about, you are adding useless things to a game, useless features to a game that nobody cares or wants. You don't listen to your community. And when you don't listen to your community, like I was saying before, when you're out of touch with the gaming community, your game will fail. So when you don't listen and think you know better than everybody else in the room, when you think you're the smartest man or woman in the room, chances are you're not. And a lot of these companies still have yet to learn that. A lot of these AAA titles that are coming out, they still have yet to just understand. Like, they're like, oh, I don't know why we bombed. But right now, off of this long-winded explanation, I've given you basically three or four reasons why they bombed. We've given you three or four reasons why they bombed. So it makes me scared for the future of video games if this continues to be a trend going forward.
Yeah, and I do want to mention the fact that it's like, oh, we can make this kind of money, but again, as you said, it's not what gamers want, and executives, even, you know, high up at Firestar that made Concord and PlayStation, they're just like, oh, we'll release more. One of them is bound to hit. No, they're not going to hit. It's the same.
And here's the issue too, because these games are also coming out so screwed up on release day, we need 10,000 patches to fix these games.
Yeah, and they're coming out too quickly from each other too. Like, Fair Games is coming out in a few months. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Will, what are your thoughts on the incredible downfall of Concord? You're a PlayStation guy too. You're the guy here of the three of us that has a PS5.
Yeah. Honestly, everything about Soulless cash grab, it's usually been a thing that always happened since the beginning of the stages of, you know, online gaming, and that was the thing with today. Honestly, we see a lot, like you said, what happened with Suicide Squad, Kill Justice League, and also happened with the Avengers game. Like, those type of games, and especially with Madden and also 2K, those has been some of these lifeless type games that just, like, man, like, hey, get the money. If you want to get the money, you can get all this and get all that. It's just like, it's instead of, especially the art of gaming and enjoyment of gaming, like, now it's just basically about how much money we're going to suck out all these people. And that's, like, the biggest thing. The only thing that's pretty fun is a NCAA game, just because we haven't had that game for close to a decade or two decades ago. So,
and by the way, that's another thing with CFB, to help with your point there. This is a team for CFB that was really passionate about making a good game, and they did.
Yeah, honestly, it's just... it's how the world goes around. It's all about basically how much money we can get from these people and disappoint them and just try to get as much as we can get possible instead of letting the gamers that they play enjoy the game. I guess they just lost that mindset, and, you know, it's all about the economic of, let's get all this money possible from these consumers. So, yeah, it's sad to see how it's all changed in the creative mindset nowadays.
Yeah, and Will, you can speak to this as well, playing PS4 as well as I had last generation. PS4 and even 360 and PS3 to a degree as well had games that were built around this idea. The best games of the generation last year were on PlayStation, and what they have in common: mm-hmm. God of War, Horizon, yeah. Last of Us, even Uncharted back in the day, Spider-Man. Games that are single-player experiences that are maybe 20, 30 hours sell better than these games. Why? Because they're the unique experiences that change the genre.
Yeah, and it's all about basically the creators playing a game, being resourceful, learning, and growing. It's basically about playing the game and having these big time experience and just basically have them say like, man, use that and say, man, I can't wait to get the next installment or the next sequel or the prequel or whatever. That was usually the best thing about these type of games.
Yeah, absolutely. And Brandon, your worries to finish us off, I think also comes from the fact that this generation, the Series S, the Series X, the PS5, this as a whole hasn't had games that, you know, Will just mentioned, and the passion and the waiting for the next installment and the single player experiences that I said. We're not having any of those real experiences on the next gen / current gen consoles, and it's making this generation a huge disappointment.
It just feels like it really feels like the excitement when we were kids of seeing a new Madden game come out or the new Call of Duty at that time or whatever, well, you know, 10 years ago or almost 15 years ago at this point. Just, you know, there was a reason to be excited. They were doing something innovative and they were creating experiences for the gamers and for the consumers just to really enjoy. And between the soulless feel of these games, the just hollow shell that they feel, you know, how we feel when playing them now, and just, I don't know if it's just a part of getting older, but I feel like it's not the same experience anymore. And the thing is, with every new console that comes out, it is becoming less and less about the consumer and the gamer, and more about just how can we squeeze every last dollar, like a cash grab. How can we squeeze every last dollar out of this as possible? Instead, but the thing is, what they're failing to realize is, and what I was saying before, you can't squeeze money out of something that isn't there. If the gaming community and the people that you are marketing your stuff to can't get behind what you are trying to sell and push on them, you will not succeed. And I've said that before, and I just said it tonight. It's scary because there's just nothing to look forward to, it feels like, anymore in this, like, you know, the last gen with the Xbox One and PS4, you know, there were some games that were worth looking forward to, and some remasters that were worth looking forward to. Now it just feels like we're just, you know, in the current gen that we have now, and with how much high tech we have, how high powered these things are, you would figure the experience would be more immersive. And I'm not saying immersive as in like, oh, virtual reality. No, I don't care about that. I mean immersive as in I want to feel like I'm playing a very fun, very different. Like, the problem is that these developers are mistaking fun and immersive for, oh, we have to add an open world feel in all of our video games, no matter what it is, sports, action, shooter, whatever that may be. I'm like, you don't need an open world. You don't need to have, you know, kind of a live service type of game. You don't need to have that. You just need to know. You need to be. The problem is, too, we've lost originality.
We lost creativity.
We've lost all of that in the gaming community. And it's like, nowadays, that's why you see a lot of people, especially, you know, people who are getting, you know, who are older, not so much teenagers and preteens, but mostly people who are getting to be our age, you know, getting into our mid-20s and older, they're going to play the indie games, the Steam games, the all those kind of games, because they are different. They are original. They bring something different to the table. They bring in a unique experience to the consumer, and they're just cheaper. So it's not worth it anymore to with these AAA titles and with these big companies to keep buying the same game over and over and over again. The same, and just like, you know, we complain every year about Madden being a $70 roster update, and it's true. That's what it's exactly what it is. Like, college football was immersive this year. They brought it back, but they brought so many things into the game that resemble, like, you know, a lot of, maybe not gameplay wise, but a lot of things into the game that people wanted to see again. You know, you brought in so many different kinds of features, or brought back a lot of the features after 10 years because we've been away for 10 years from that game. But they did it right. They might not have been perfect, but this was a good stepping stone. But the problem is, how does a game like that come out 10 years after the series basically got discontinued, and it's already better than any sports game I've played in the past maybe 5 to 7 years?
I would argue 10 to 15.
Possibly.
I haven't played a sports game that good in a very long time. It's not perfect, yeah. But it's...
And the thing is, that's also just saying too. You know, I'm not just trying to talk about sports, but as a gaming as a whole, that's just one game. But you see how they listen to the community, they listen to what the fans wanted. They try to do something creative with it. They made it fun and immersive, and people are talking about it. That's how you make a good game. When you're making the same kinds of games as everybody else, you might make a little bit of money, yeah. But you could have done a lot better had you brought something new to the table. And the thing is, you know, people are going to say, oh, well, they don't have much time. You know, certain studios have time constraints, all those different kinds of things. I get that. But then at that point, you're better off scrapping the damn game and thinking of something else to do. Because if you're just going to put out a lot of the same things that everyone else has already tried to do before, or is doing better than you, or it's like you're trying to compete with another game, But there's another game that did it better and did it first, then you're just better off not doing it at all. And the problem is, when you're throwing out all these same, when all these big AAA titles are coming out and they're all the same thing, you are watering down the gaming experience, and you're watering it down. You're basically slapping the consumers in the face, and it's only getting worse.
And I'm gonna say this too. We're focusing on college football. Helldivers 2, I brought up. Different experience. Live service game, but it's a different experience. Baldur's Gate 3, and you guys are going to be disgusted when you hear this. When Baldur's Gate 3 came out, right, they took over 10 years to develop that. I think exactly 10 or maybe 11, something around that nature. A very popular game, right? I've only seen clips of it. I don't know if you guys have played it yet. I'm excited to get into it on Xbox at some point. But that game took 10 years, right? A lot of money was put into that. A lot of effort was put into that. And the Destiny 2, like, creative director or GM or something like that, had a press conference, and they said, we don't want to do that because that's considered over-delivering. And I sat there going, huh? Isn't the point to make a game that, as Brandon said, people talk about, people are excited about, people are going to keep coming back to? Why is that considered an over-deliver instead of the gold standard? It's absolutely asinine. It's unbelievable. Will, do you have any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, honestly, I think the biggest thing also, NCAA, and I agree, I think, yeah, great that it's now back, but when time goes on and this becomes a recurring thing, and NCAA continues to be a game that's come out yearly, that will it still be fresh? Will it still be exciting like it was when it first came back a decade later? Like, that's going to be the biggest thing, because we've seen games that pass some time off and then come back, and then we just hype about it, but then when it becomes a yearly thing, it's like, okay, well, yeah, the games come back, okay, new roster, okay, big players, okay. So I just feel like, yeah, it's going to be exciting, but I feel like the NCAA football is going to fall, and the rest of the other game, video game, sport games.
Yeah, that is the concern with the yearly releases too. So, yeah, definitely a big thing there moving forward. Any other thoughts overall before we go?
think we hit everything.
I don't think so.
I think we got everything. We'll be back tomorrow. Will and Brandon will join me for the Eagles opener in Brazil versus the Green Bay Packers. We will see you all then.
Yes, sir. Have a good one, guys.
Yep. See ya.